Get closer to Irish rugby with News Talk and Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team.
Gary Thorney of the Irish Times is in studio. Keith Wood is on the line. Gentlemen, this is not how it was supposed to start.
No, not at all. No, we all deep down presumed Ireland were going to win. That was just after a 6 month period when Ireland beat the All Blacks and South Africa and Australia and go into a game with Scotland, who traditionally more often than not in Six Nations Ireland beat, the expectation was undoubtedly that Ireland would win. And I think it was the manner of the defeat as well which made the disappointment all the more acute, because Ireland weren't themselves in the first half. I mean, to concede the three tries they conceded was indicative of the sloppiness, for whatever reason, the lethargy, they're not being quite at the pitch of the game the first half. And then as galling was to then come back and scale the mountaintop and get into the lead. I watched it again this Sunday and you freeze frame it at 22-21. You wonder, you see Ireland go attacking from all angles and you wonder, how on earth did they lose from this position? And I would say that all the various reviews which started on Sunday night, went through Monday and extended on into Tuesday with the defensive review, must have been for uncomfortable viewing for the Irish players themselves. And, you know, there's still a title to play for, which is great. I do believe they'll stay in the hunt for that for a while longer, for sure. But you look at the age profile of players like Rory Best, 34, Devon Toner, 30, Jamie Heaslip, 33, Rob Kearney, 30, Johnny Sexton, 30, when he comes back into, you know, you wonder when Ireland will go in as 2-1 second favourites on the back of the success they had in the autumn. And also the biennial itinerary, which has England and France coming to Dublin, which is always the one that's more favourably disposed towards a tilt at the title or the slam. But hey, slams, two of them since in all time, just one since the late 40s. It shows you how difficult they are.
Yeah. Okay, Keith, why? What happens?
I thought Scotland played very well. I thought they played with a great level of ferocity. I thought they made very few mistakes. They made very few mistakes in defence in the first half. And I thought we seemed to be off a gallop. For whatever reason, I don't know. Whether it's attitude or... And this is a frustrating conversation, if we're to be honest, Ger. You know, that idea that we wouldn't be fully up for a game, but we seemed to be quite flat. It looked flat. It was the only team bringing anything to the party were Scotland. And what Scotland had this time, they're often aggressive and they often bring a lot of aggression and in the tackling and with ball carrying. But what they actually had last Saturday was they were absolutely clinical. And Scotland haven't been clinical for 15 years. So every chance they got, they took. Through kicks, through tries, through gaps, through slips, through anything that happened, they plucked it off and picked it very well. And, you know, I thought they played with a level of confidence. They kind of hyped themselves up during the week.
Yeah.
And if you do that, by God, you have to back it up. And they backed it up totally. And so that was the first half. And we were just, you know, we were lucky to be the score we were at halftime. I thought Scotland could have scored another try. They didn't get the chance to do it, but it was the sort of momentum was there for them to actually have got that bonus point before halftime. In the second half, we fully got back into position. We weren't playing the perfect rugby, but we actually played some really fine scores. We built up a level of pressure, which we didn't do at all in the first half. We spent a bit of time in the Scottish half, which we hadn't done in the first half, and we took our scores, which was brilliant. And I would go with the point that Gerry said at 22-21. All the momentum was with Ireland, and we needed to pick it up from there. And what actually happened was we got line breaks, we got inside of the line, and we didn't have any composure. For whatever reason, and I can't figure that one out, because this isn't something that we would say that you would see in one of Joe Schmidt's teams, and you wouldn't say of this present Irish team. You would expect that 10 or 15 yards from the line, when they do get that position, that they would look both ways and make the pass, or pin their ears back and score, or get the ball, get a ruck, set it up for a very quick ruck. You're in the ascendancy at that point, and we didn't. We seemed to panic. We seemed to make the wrong decision. We seemed to hurry to make a decision. And we just lacked that composure. And suddenly, like, I was looking up into that, and I was kind of beginning to have a bit of a giggle, having not giggled at all. And when Paddy Jackson went over for a cracking try in a great line, I just said, that's it. That was what was needed. But actually what happened afterwards is we took our foot off the pedal totally. And Scotland were deserving winners. Simple as.
Okay. There's a bunch of stuff in that. Part of it is our attack and composure. And let me come back to that because I want to just talk about the defence first.
Mm-hmm.
There's conflicting stuff coming from Andy Farrell and Robbie Henshaw. Robbie Henshaw says, I think it was more, and I'm not, this isn't being used to hang them out to dry, but it's just that there's definitely a conflicting view. And I understand that there are two bits taken from much longer mm-hmm. press conferences or interviews. Henshaw says, I think it was more our spacing around the ruck. We were too narrow and weren't getting off the line. We were square on them instead of hunting them from the inside. Our spacing was what we needed to fix. Andy Farrell, that's why I keep coming back to appetite and mood. It ain't just about spacing and getting across the field, because if you space out too much, they'll run through the middle of you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So Henshaw says it's technical, but actually the defence coach, whose job it is to say it's not that. The attitude was wrong. And in a way, like, that's okay, maybe it's not as worrying, but in a way it's more worrying.
Well, if I can jump in, Cherry, there's two parts for it. Yes, the spacing was wrong and players weren't readjusting to get into the right position. And the right position is what you're hoping for in the ideal world is to have a front row forward on the pillar, which is closest to the ruck, followed by a second row, a back row and backs then afterwards. From some of Scotland's tries were simple plays that hit up the middle and suddenly there was a total disjoint and you had Gary Ringrose standing one out from pillar. You don't want the fast guy in that position. You want him on the outside so that when the spacing is more vulnerable, you have fast guys who are able to cover it, whether it's on a press or a push or whatever it is. That's one side of it. I would have said the work rate to get to the other side for an awful lot of the game was very poor. We didn't mark up well on the blind side. We often had four or five guys opposite one or two guys, which means it doesn't matter what you do with the spacing. The amount of work that the guys, when they're outnumbered, have to do is hard. And when you have the wrong guys in the wrong place and the spacing isn't exactly right and you don't have the work ethic to get across from the blind side to the open side, then you're going to suffer, and suffer is what we did.
Yeah, the first try, as has been well documented, there were six Irish defenders on the blind side when there was only one Scottish attacker. That's just a lack of read, a lack of awareness of what's going on, which is unusual for an Irish team, but it has happened before. For whatever reason, when they get into times of difficulty, like against Argentina in the World Cup quarterfinal and other times during the autumn, even particularly against Australia and again on Saturday, they have a tendency to become a little bit narrow. It's ironic that Ireland had to go through, I think it was 19 phases for the Keith Earls try, 16 phases for the Paddy Jackson try, and 8 phases for the Eamon Henderson try, and yet Scotland got one first phase try and one second phase try. So that just shows you how much harder Ireland had to work for their three tries as compared to Scotland. For the one that Josh Strauss trucked up the middle, Jackson goes towards him, Henshaw makes the tackle, Ringrose goes in for a poach but doesn't really delay the ball, as Keith says, rejoins the line, second out, next out from McGrath as the pillar. Then it was O'Brien, then it was Henderson, then it was Jackson, and they got a little bit tight as that brought in Earls, and it left Rob Kearney facing a 2-on-1. So that was very reminiscent of the Argentinian game. I think the two comments from Henshaw and Farrell are interrelated. I think, you know, you're splitting hairs a little bit, because it's partly an attitude that gets them back into the line and makes the spacings correct. I think it was a bit of both.
Well,
I think it was a bit of both. There was a bit of narrowness there.
Okay, the other thing is that Robbie Henshaw was saying that they're missing Johnny and Jared, have been around a while. For us on the weekend, our communication could have been better. They're masters at it. A few younger guys, myself, Gary and Paddy, are still growing in confidence, finding a voice. Again, this is something that Andy Farrell rejects. He's like, look, there's 82,000, 85,000 people there. A voice is worth nothing anyway. I've heard a lot of talk about different players within our side and have they got a voice or not. At international level, in front of 85,000 people, a voice is worth nothing. It's instinctively being able to be good enough to get to it straight away. Like, there's definitely him, and I in some ways you respect this. It's like, lads, you have the plans,
mm-hmm.
you have the responsibility, mm-hmm. and you have the voices. Somehow, on the field, we have a 6-on-1 situation, and that's not on our coaching. That's on you guys.
No, but then again, when you think back to the best Irish wins against France at the World Cup and against the All Blacks in Chicago, and you think by comparison to Argentina in the World Cup and last Saturday, the common ingredient is that the 10, 12, 13 axes in the two very good wins against the All Blacks against France were Johnny Sexton, Robbie Henshaw and Jared Payne, who, you know, we appreciate more perhaps in his absence than when he plays. By comparison, for the World Cup quarterfinal again last Saturday, you know, Robbie Henshaw effectively last Saturday went from junior partner to senior partner with Paddy Jackson on his inside and Gary Ringrose on his outside. I do think Gary Ringrose took quite a dunt in the first minute, which might have, you know, unhinged him a little bit. It was a Six Nations debut. I do think that Jarrod Payne, every time I hear Johnny Sexton or Joe Schmidt or anybody else talk about him, they all say what a magnificent communicator he is on the pitch. And I would have thought there is a need for communication and a voice can be heard regardless of the size of the crowd at the stadium.
Yeah, I'd be, I have to say, I'd be closer with Farrell on it. And for me, looking from, you know, from pitch side, the lack of urgency, the lack of aggression, you know, and we definitely have had these conversations before, Ger, where you look at it and say, can this be rectified in a week? And if all of the system failures and all of the issues that we had were technical problems, we'd be hard pushed to get them right in a week. So for me, it comes down to attitude. And I'm not saying that's a poor attitude from the players, but I'm saying that the attitude was off. So whether things were, and you don't even want to say that things were taken for granted. But I can tell you that the level of aggression and dog was not there in our performance. And that translates and communicates far more on a field than one person talking on a field. I would accept that to be true.
Is part of that team selection, or is that just injuries that, you know, that we didn't have our most renowned dogs out there?
Yeah, I like.
Although we had plenty, like there is, you know.
Yeah, but I would always say that, look, we have gone past the point of where everything was reliant on passion and aggression alone, and you know, at this level, at this point in where Ireland are, that isn't enough to win a game. But I think it is enough to lose a game if you don't have them. And we looked shell-shocked for a lot of it. And maybe that's where some of the leadership comes in. And that's where maybe, you know, Robbie was trying to articulate in elements of that. It's when you're under a huge amount of pressure, who is making the call after 10 or 15 minutes saying, lads, we have not got into this. We need to put it up the jumper for a second. We need to get stuck into people for a second. We need to set a target so that we can actually hit someone and build up a head of steam, because at the moment we're only going laterally across the field and they're just picking us off. And Scotland's tackling, and Paul O'Connell said it in commentary, it wasn't that the defence of Scotland was great. It was their tackling was like so aggressive and so incredibly well timed that we were being knocked off kilter. So it became very hard to figure out who was pulling the strings at that stage. And I think that could be some of the point of communication that goes in there. But you have to bring that level of aggression to the party. And I felt we didn't, actually. And Scotland did. But we still got ourselves into the game.
Yeah.
And so we were still in a position that even with everything like that not going well for us in the first half, we were still in a position to do it, and we lost our way again. And that's, you know, that's down to accuracy. And, you know, when you're making the wrong decisions, or when a group of players make the wrong decisions, you say, well, they don't make those decisions normally, which means something is off. And it's an ongoing argument Paul O'Connell and I have had over years, is which comes first, the errors or the mentality, you know, as to like which part is it first. If you're a bit off the mark for whatever reason, you
the errors will happen. That's
pitch,
yeah.
Do the errors happen then, or do the errors mean that mentally you go off a little? And I always think it's mentality first, actually. And it's just watching what was happening. I couldn't feel that we were. I felt we were in the game. I was kind of surprised that Scotland scored with such ease.
Why though? How does that happen? Because this is not, it's nobody's first dance.
Well, you know, when you go away to South Africa and you're missing a lot of key players and you're playing the Springboks where you've never won before, or when you're facing the All Blacks and you've never beaten the All Blacks in 111 years, or when you're facing Australia and you're down bodies and you've got a makeshift back line to get through in the second half, I would safely say there's a fair element of fear in that. And fear is a good thing. You know, all the players say it to me. Rob Kearney said in the week, in the build of the match, an element of fear is a good thing. Maybe the element of fear playing Scotland isn't quite as big. You know, the six of the previous seven matches have been against the Southern Hemisphere Big Three. I don't know. What Andy Farrell certainly implied was that it was a reaction to events on the pitch, and certainly going 7-0 down discommoded them. And then I think there was a key moment when they went to the corner and they got a penalty. They went to the corner again. They could have gone for scrum because the Scottish front row was on a warning. But anyway, they went to the corner and it was largely well executed, except that two forwards and Rory Best broke off with Rory Best and the ball tucked under his arm, and Romain Poit correctly called accidental obstruction or whatever and gave the Scots a relieving scrum. And that was a big momentum shift for the game, because I think that would have calmed them down, good to 7-all. The line-out mall is working. Think back to Chicago. I think 4 of the 5 tries emanated one way or the other from going to the corner off line-out malls. This time around, 5 times Ireland went to the corner. All they got out of it was one penalty and turned over the ball a couple of times. We got beaten in the air a couple of times. And you, like Keith's been saying, we have to give credit to the Scots as well.
Sure.
They have an excellent defensive line-out with Richie Gray and Johnny Gray to throw up there. They look like a team in the first half that just needed a timeout. You watch the Super Bowl final on Sunday night and the coaches have that, you know, up their sleeves, timeout. And when they got their timeout at half time, they knew exactly what they were going to do in the second half and went about it for 20 minutes well nigh perfectly. They just looked like a team got a little bit rattled. I mean, festaments the point of panic, I don't know, just a little bit rattled, a little bit shaken by the way the events of the first 20 minutes unfolded.
Yeah, they're supposed to be above that. They're supposed to be, this is the evolution of a team who's one of the top 4 teams in the world.
Well, I still go back to it, Jerry. I've played in some of these games, right? So you know, I'd have first hand of that slightly hollow feeling that you have when you're playing and things aren't going. And I'd be loath to say it's taking it for granted and taking these games for granted. I'm not saying that. But I do think a game like this, much and annoying and all as it is for us watching from it, is so annoying for the players. But that it is almost a reminder that not every game is has the huge emotional charge. That even though it's a Six Nations game and it's one that you would expect to win, you still have to go out and prove it. It's a physical game and it's a mental game. And they're interlinked. And Scotland really set the tone on that physical battle. And mentally, they were sharp and ready. And this is a team that has been forever the bridesmaid. They really haven't had the win. They've had one win in 16 years in the first match of the Six Nations. So this is their second one. So they haven't had so many good days either. And it was as if that they got to the pitch of it better. And maybe because we didn't have guys that had that experience of knowing what to do in that situation. And we did, but they were guys who were under pressure. So you had Rory Best, who our lineup wasn't functioning fully. Yes, we were going forward in the scrum, but we weren't going forward in at ruck time. So you're not running onto the ball. You're not getting to see the game. So his head is in the middle of stuff an awful lot. You have Jamie Heaslip and Conor Murray, who, again, are under pressure at ruck time, under pressure passing time, not getting over the gain line, not running up in front to see the ball. And then you have a young back line for the most part, or Rob Kearney out at the back, who I thought had a really good game. And he's come in for an awful lot of flack. I know he made a couple of mistakes, but I thought he had a really fine game. And I actually thought he was one of the few guys that really led in that first half by dint of what he was trying to do. But maybe it wasn't getting through. And so there is an element of truth in what Robbie Henshaw was saying, but I think not for the reason he's saying it. And I do believe there's truth in what Farrell is saying, because I just thought our attitude wasn't right. But no, they've spent 2.5 days drilling through, trying to figure out why it wasn't right. And they're in that room figuring it out. It's how honest they are. And we've been told that Joe Schmidt's changing rooms are honest. So they will have come to realise that no way in the world can they afford their attitude to be off the mark when they go to Rome. And they have to get all the other things right. And those young guys have to grow up pretty promptly.
There's now no choice but to come away with 5 points if you want to have any vague perspective of winning this thing.
Yeah, it can be done, you know, and I think it's slightly more likely with the advent of the bonus point system. I think Ireland, having lost their opening game, should be grateful. I'm not in favour of this system at all, but I am now, more so than I was up until kickoff last Saturday. Conceivably, Ireland, come tea time on Sunday, could be second in the table. Because they did get a bonus point. They made history, not the history they were looking for. They got a bonus point in defeat last Saturday. If they get a bonus point win away in Italy on Saturday, it's one more point than Wales got last Sunday, and they came with a whisker of getting one, and they probably left one behind. Took them so long to subdue the Italians. I'm not saying the Italians will be easy to subdue, but I think you'll get a brooding Ireland all week long, and you'll get a completely different mental attitude in the wake of a defeat. Italy were a little unlucky that Ireland beat the All Blacks in Chicago, because it meant that they got the All Blacks a week later. It might be that Italy were a little bit unlucky that Ireland lost last week, and they get them in the rebound as well. And I think you'll see a much different attitude. I'm not saying Ireland are going to go on and win the title from this, but I am saying that, you know, it's still alive. And you're right, I think, you know, if chance presents itself with 20 minutes to go chasing the bonus point, they'll go chasing.
Yeah.
I think you'll see a completely different performance, even from largely the same team.
Keith, the whole notion of CJ Standard not being in the team has been laughed at over the last number of months, because his performances have been week after week after week after week. He's man of the match. But is there a case for having Peter O'Mahony in this team ahead of him? I realise O'Mahony wasn't fit, so it wasn't actually an option. But
not
at
sure
some point in this tournament,
this week either.
He's due back though, right? So
at some point,
yeah.
But it's a grade one, grade two hamstring strain, stroke tear, whatever. That doesn't sound to me like he's going to be back this week. And he wasn't training fully in Tuesday. He was just running.
Well, then it's very unlikely you'll see him. Yeah. But just so that you have somebody who has something different in O'Mahony. Because the O'Mahony and Stander, everybody's like, oh, they're interchangeable. But they're not. They're different characters and they're different players.
No, entirely different players. And look, I would have had... I think Peter O'Mahony's been fighting very hard to get back fit. He's had a horrible couple of years, really, with surgery after surgery after surgery, and now another injury, and it's tough for him. I don't think they're interchangeable. I think they bring entirely different things to it. I love the dog. And I remember the first time I saw Peter O'Mahony, I said he was a throwback. You know, he's a guy that could have been honed in the amateur days of rough and tumble rugby, and he gets stuck into the middle of everything. I mean, he's more tape on him holding him together, you know, than you could possibly have. Whether he goes ahead of him or not, look, the expectation is that Ireland would have got over the gain line, and in that instance, it's CJ Stander I would want in the team to be ball carrying, because he pumps holes in everywhere. It's nigh on impossible to get over the gain line from a standing start when you're having to go back to get the ball, and that's what Ireland were doing. So I don't know that it's a fair comment to take it in that fashion. I would want CJ Stander on the field all the time, because he is the most explosive carrier we have. Having said that, the wish would have been to have Peter on the field or on the bench.
Yeah.
Because you just, if it's getting into that grit, oh God, he does it so well. And I think we were, by having him injured and not having Dunica Ryan, and like this time last year, I have to say, I would have said pick Dunica Ryan ahead of Ian Henderson. Not a chance. Henderson is a class footballer. But that's fine. You can't have eight class footballers, and you need a couple of dogs in there. And Dunica Ryan in this season has been phenomenal. And I thought he was finished, and I'm not happy to say that, but I really did. I thought he was finished a couple of years ago. I thought his standard dropped a little, but this year he has been phenomenal. His work rate, the annoyance value that he has on the opposition, is a pleasure to watch. And I think we lacked a little bit of that dog in the pack, and you know, we need it really.
Any changes, do you think?
I think Dunica Ryan will come in, and rightly so. I agree with Keith. I think he's playing the best rugby of his career at 33 years of age this season, whatever age he is. That Racine Metro performance away from home, I would have given him man of the match, the way he charged through a couple of Racine Metro malls to bring them down single-handedly. I think the mall, defensively and offensively, works better when he's in there. He provides that bit of dog, and I think you need that bit of dog, particularly against an Italian pack in Rome.
He'll be in ahead of Ian Henderson. Because
yes, Henderson on the bench. I don't think Olsen Delan looked particularly fit. I'd match fit certainly when he came on last Saturday. So you start Ryan. He's a very experienced line-out operator. He's good in the mauls. He puts in a shift. And then you've got Ian Henderson to be very explosive in the last 20 or 30 minutes. It's got a good mix to it. I can't imagine there'll be too many other changes. Andrew Trimble is clearly fit again. You might imagine that he will come back into the mix somehow, maybe on the bench for Tommy Bow. But otherwise, I wouldn't see too many changes. I can't imagine for the world that Peter O'Mahony and Johnny Sexton are fit to go this Saturday, and even if they're coming close to it,
they won't be risked.
Discussion being the better part of valour, yeah, hold them back for France at home 2 weeks later.
Yeah, okay. The spread is 22 points. That seems That seems high, I have to say. It does seem high.
Like, it does seem high. And on strictly on the form of last weekend, you probably wouldn't be weighing in Ireland. But then again, even when the Italians are very competitive for an hour, as they were against Wales, they still got beaten by 26, didn't they? And, you know, I think the bonus points again changes the landscape in that if you're going to have a bet on the spread. Because if Ireland are 18, 20 points up, but they've only scored two or three tries and it's 20 minutes to go, because of the new system and because of what happened last weekend, they're going to go for it in a way they mightn't have done in the past.
The Italy performance against Wales, Conor O'Shea was complaining afterwards. Well, look, he's saying he wants them to be refereed the same way all the other teams were refereed. There's a big, long body of work that is required to make Italy the sixth best team in Europe at the moment. The BBC are running a feature tonight about how Georgia are technically the sixth best team in Europe and they should actually be in the competition ahead of them. But anyway, that's for another day. The point is that for O'Shea, there are incremental victories. There are signposts along the way that they're doing good work. And that first half last week, that was a good half's work from them.
It was a strange game of rugby. There was no score for an age. And it was compelling because you were going to see whether Italy would get their act together. They were keeping a lot of their discipline. It was quite interesting listening to the referee losing it totally for the fact that players on both sides kept barking at him all the time, and he eventually marched Parisi back 10 yards at one stage.
Keith, one quick question on that. Hadn't he already warned Reese Webb for twice giving him lip before that?
And he should have penalised him.
And then Reese Webb gave him more lip and he didn't penalise him, and then he penalises Sergio Parisi. Am I right? Isn't that the way I heard it?
Yeah, no, yeah. He did, but he had said it to Parisi as well, and I think he'd lost the interest in having to have guys barking at him. It was funny again, Paul O'Connell said the other day on Roman Poit, he said Paul had wasted an awful lot of his time talking to Roman Poit because Poit didn't like listening to him. And he talked to him too much. It took him a long time to figure out that he was better off shutting up and saying nothing and offering an odd word sort of a couple of times a half. And, you know, there is, you know, referees react in different things. But anyway, Italy played, I thought, played very well for a lot of it. Did some things really, really well without setting the world alight. I just thought they were kind of in it. They were in a good spot. And it just disappeared for them. Now, Wales were putting them under an awful lot of pressure just by dint of that. And I have sympathy for Conor O'Shea's predicament because I have heard that same line said all the way back to Nick Mallett, that the referees tend to send them to the sin bin sooner or not. But actually what happens after 60 minutes in Italy, and has happened for 15 years, is that a lot of their front five fatigue and a lot of them flop at ruck time. A lot of them are lazy in the defensive line and are offside in the defensive line. A great servant as he was, Castro Giovanni was a great man to give away a host of penalties with 10, 15 minutes to go. You could almost guarantee it. Because they put in a huge shift to push and try and drill the opposition into the ground. And if they're still on the field at the end and it hasn't worked, that's when the gaps appear. And two, you know, sloppy defensive line, suddenly there's a guy in the bin, suddenly try, nearly the fourth. But not quite.
I got to go here, but Ireland are going to win this game by how many points?
If they turn up and work unbelievably hard, 15-17.
Okay. Lads, great stuff. Thanks very much for joining us.
Cheers. Pleasure.
Hopefully it'll be a bit happier next week. Around 53106 is the text number if you want to get involved. Leicester nil, Derby nil at halftime. We'll do that. And we'll also talk to Andy Lee a little bit later on this hour.
Off the Ball.
Home of Wednesday night rugby with Woody and Jerry.
On News Talk 106-108.